Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, Brian here. Wanted to remind you that at the end of this Another Round with Church and State, we have part two of our intoxicated extra interview with the awesome nonprofit Broadway Bound Kids, who host the annual Broadway Spelling Bee with your favorite Broadway stars. And please, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. And now, your special Friday, Broadwasted. Hello, and welcome to another round with Broadwasted, where we're pre-gaming for the weekend. I'm your host, Brian Plofsky, and today we're getting to the church on time because we're coming straight from the Brick Church Station in the Garden State to get to the State Fair with Winston Churchill and State of Play. Yes, by State of Play, I'm referring to the 2009 film starring Helen Mirren, Russell Crowe, Ben Affleck, Rachel McAdams, Robin Wright, Jason Bateman, and Jeff Daniels.
Seriously?
Yeah.
That was a movie?
And the
with all those people?
Yeah, it did not do well.
The British TV version was better.
Who here saw it? Did any of us see it?
I've seen the movie.
Wait, what was it?
One of you saw it.
What was it called?
State of Play? When a congressional aide is killed,
you
a Washington, D.C. journalist starts investigating the case involving the congressman, his old college friend.
So like Pelican
State
Brain,
of Play.
Sort of.
Those old college
in
friends.
A world,
yeah. In a world.
Will your college friends still talk to you?
sorry.
Well, wetting their whistle today with me are our usual Twitter happy hosts, including Kevin, Broadchurch, and State of Being, Jager.
Broadchurch was fantastic.
It is.
Yeah. I'll take that.
Yes. Great. And Kimberly, our game master and unofficial babysitter for the hour.
Hello.
Welcome.
Stay safe.
And with us today are the playwright and lead actor from the off-Broadway play Church and State, if you couldn't have guessed, which is now playing at New World Stages in New York City. Let's give a big, broad-waisted welcome to Friends of the Show.
Friends of the show.
Jason O'Dell Williams and Rob Nagle.
Hey!
We're Friends of the Show.
Friends of the Jason.
Show.
I didn't know it was a friend. That's Rob. I'm Jason.
Yeah, that's Jason.
Now you can
everybody.
Discern us for the rest of the time.
Perfect.
Well, welcome, guys. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us. This is super cool.
Of course. So just so you know, to follow Church and State on Twitter and Instagram, it's at Church State Play. And Jason's handle is J-O-W in NYC.
You can tell I came up with that like a long time ago.
And Rob's is at Nagdoggy?
Yeah, at Nagdoggy.
So you came up with that yesterday.
I came up with that recently, to stay cool. It's
and
true.
That's doggy with an I-E.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh.
Well, how else would you spell it?
I don't know.
Right?
I'm just...
Nagdoggy.
So let's start with what we always start with. What are you drinking?
What are you drinking?
What are you drinking?
All right, well, I am...
Kevin,
tell us. So the majority of us are drinking Angry Orchard Cider. But Jason has a fancy cider.
I totally dorked out and brought my own booze to the party. And so I brought this thing. It's called JK's Scrumpy Hard Cider. It's farmhouse organic.
Well, cider is a delicious treat. So
I love cider.
I used to make fun of my friend who drank cider, and now that's what I drink.
I only drink cider if there's bourbon in it, but that's
cider
just
that is delightful. Mm. Have you ever had an Angry Orchard with a shot of Fireball?
Is that
no,
a thing?
That
yes.
sounds brilliant.
It's delicious.
What's it called?
Is there
it's the Angry Orchard Fireball.
It totally is called something, and I have no memory of what it's called.
There's also an Irish wine, which is Magners and Jameson.
Oh, it's called Angry Balls.
Angry Balls?
One shot of Fireball whiskey, one pint of Angry Orchard crisp apple cider, and then you drop the Fireball into the cider, and you drink it, and it's called Angry Balls.
I don't think I could order that.
No. I don't think I could either with a straight face.
Well,
or a gay face.
Oh, you could order it with a gay face. Could I get you something? I'll have two Angry Balls. No, just for me.
So, we usually start with, what have you seen this week? Kevin, I know you saw Church and State.
I did.
So tell us a little bit about, I know they wrote it and are in it, but from your point of view, from the audience.
From the more important person
can you
in
explain,
the room, the
yeah,
audience.
Mm-hmm. Since you're the most important person in the audience, could you explain just a brief plot?
Sure. So I think...
Then tell him if he gets it right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no, this
so
would be good. I like hearing other people's descriptions actually better.
Because without giving too much away, I would say that Church and State...
How's it end?
So church and state.
With cinnamon balls. It's cinnamon balls.
Yeah, definitely angry cinnamon balls everywhere. So church and state is a play that is about, on the surface, it discusses the gun laws in our nation. But I think more importantly, it's a really awesome view of both sides of the political spectrum and how people as Americans feel and vote and what is important to them when they're looking at politics and stuff like that. The show focuses on a politician with his wife next to him who's helping him with his campaign. And basically it's them trying to discuss how this Southern, very conservative senator has now, because of a big event that has happened that has brought the gun laws in our nation to the forefront, he is now trying to decide how he actually feels and has made a speech that has completely changed how a lot of his constituents and the people voting feel about him. And so it's kind of like his very close people together trying to decide if they're doing damage control or if they are going into a whole different spectrum with their campaign. So it's really awesome to see people on both sides of the spectrum. They're not having a conversation where you're just listening to people talk about like the issues on pro or con. What they're doing is they're talking about like the business of politics in the like as the backdrop of what these issues are. And so it kind of gives you insight on what the politicians are going through their process of how they feel. And also like it really does shed a light on the polarity of the voters and how people feel in America about certain basic issues because of other things they bring to it, like religion and family and their own personal circumstances. And it's crazy to say that all of this is really well handled in an 85-minute play.
It's like 75.
It's like 75? 75. Yes, but it's less than an hour and a half was enough for me to kind of hear multiple perspectives, get like an M. Night Shyamalan twist, and then all of a sudden have like...
They've been dead the whole time?
Don't give away.
Bruce Willis
some
is
people
in the third
haven't
act.
Seen
and
the
then
film.
Once you have the twist, it kind of...
I don't know which one I'm talking about.
You feel the whole audience suddenly like...
The village.
Signs?
Yeah. Were
there
signs?
So they all were the people
yeah.
who were supposed to
drink
protect
water,
the mermaid?
Away.
Nobody?
Yeah, I got it. I saw Lady in the Water.
I love that movie.
Really? I like
The Lady in the Water?
Yeah, I enjoyed
it. Well, Kevin, thank you for that.
Unbreakable.
Unbreakable is his best.
Unbreakable
is his best.
Well, guys, we're talking about the play.
Well, Kevin gave us a
so that was
pretty concise elevator pitch there.
You're welcome. I was on a long elevator ride. We were going
to
the 50th floor. I live in a penthouse, thank you very much.
But thank you, Kevin.
You're welcome.
So I'd like to just go straight into talking about the play itself.
Was that right?
That was not right at all, Jason. That's not the play he wrote.
Play, did he, maybe he was in Avenue Q that night?
Saw, I don't think he saw the opening night.
Just
I was seeing the gazillion bubble
the
show.
Bubble show. Yeah.
Which is also
ladies and gentlemen, this is the bazillion bubble show at New
Wouldn't
World
Stages.
Wouldn't
that be amazing
that
if that's what that show is actually about?
But, like underneath all
Yo,
the bubbles.
Is that the twist?
Is it the bubble show?
But it's actually political commentary. Yeah.
So... North Carolina Republican senator who's up for re-election. There's a school shooting in his hometown and at a funeral for two of the kids, two brothers. He's asked by a reporter if he turned to prayer in his time of need. And for the first time in a really long time, he answers honestly. So it's a play about faith in God. It's a play about faith in your platform as a politician. It examines gun safety issues. And it also makes you kind of face what it might look like if you started telling the truth for the first time in a long time and really answered like what your heart was telling you. So it's a comedy, which is astounding to
it's
me.
It's really funny too.
There's so much funny in it in a play that handles some not so funny issues. And
so very
that's how
similar
I talk about
to
it.
State of Play the 2009 film.
Closer to Lady in the Lake.
Oh, Lady Closer to Lady
meets Unbreakable.
Okay. Yeah. So Lady in the Water.
M. Night is getting a lot
scandal.
Of stuff.
Yeah,
on
yeah, well, it's good. He needs it. He's had a tough road.
I read that you wrote this kind of you were it was sparked by the Virginia Tech shootings.
That was the first one that for me, I went to UVA, which is the sort of the rival school of Virginia Tech. And so it was about 10 years after I graduated that the shooting happened at Virginia Tech in Blacksburg, Virginia. We had the people from the Virginia Tech victims Family Outreach Foundation came and did a talk back with us, and they were amazing and wonderful. It was a very powerful
incredible
night.
Yeah.
But so the Virginia Tech one was the one that hit me the most because I watched on the news candlelight vigils in Charlottesville for the kids in Blacksburg, and it just, I don't know, it just struck me very powerfully. And that was the first one. And then Tucson was the second one that I was like, oh my God, why isn't anything happening? And then, of course, Sandy Hook, Newtown, it was like, well, something's got to change. And then I just, in like a fit of just anger and rage, literally in a month, I spit out a draft of this play, which was not a very good draft. It was a very angry, one-sided, basically his final speech, like a 30-page version of that.
Seven-hour play.
It was a really long speech, and that speech came very early in the play. But, you know, then over time I figured, oh, how do I make it so it's a story that people can sit through? And that's where the humor came from, was because I was having a hard time just as a writer reading it, like, oh, this is so, like, horrible and painful. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, how do you bring him in? How do I entertain myself as a, you know, writer slash viewer? And then I just kind of created these characters that I think are fun and funny. And even though this serious stuff is happening around them, there's still regular life happening around them too. So
because it's billed as a serious comedy, honest to God.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear both from being on stage mm-hmm. and kind of creating this character and having written it. How did you balance the serious aspects of what this is really trying to deal with and alleviating that with humor?
I think a lot of the humor is inherent to the characters and their behavior. So it's not, you know, it's not like Noises Off where there are a bunch of slamming doors and they're right. like, it's funny, hey, you know, gun safety and waka waka. It doesn't right, right. go into that kind of territory, but a lot of the behavior and the decisions that you're making, some of the ridiculousness of politics gets to come out in ways that would make you laugh on any show that examines this kind of world or any world for that matter. And I think a lot of the humor is based on what the audience comes in with. Because sometimes there are audiences that really want to process and listen to it, and you can't hear a smile, even though they're enjoying mm-hmm. themselves. And other times they will walk out, and it's like a Fresh Prince of Bel-Air taping. Mm. It's like they are rowdy and laughing at everything.
I love that that's the same.
That's a great example.
Yeah. And I think so the audiences decide how raucous and how funny they're going to be. The humor is always there. It doesn't take you too long into a dark, deep, despairing area before lifting you out. And he also doesn't keep you in such a high hijinks ensuing humorous area before he's going to drop the floor out from under you and you realize, oh, it got heavy again.
Which is very, like, real.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, like, when you're in those kind of situations, like, you deal with, like, really difficult things, then all of a sudden, like, someone does something stupid and everybody laughs because you need to.
Yeah.
And I feel like that was a really nice balance.
I feel like there are some jokes, but there's also, I think most of the humor is somebody either breaking the tension or stating the obvious or pointing out the ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, to me, where humor comes from. And I think also the reason it goes from high to high to low all the time is because me as a person and as a writer, the short attention span.
You have a very short attention span.
And the way I write is in short bursts. Yeah. And so it's like, this is the funny and this is the serious. And but I like that sort of push and pull
yeah.
all the time.
Yeah.
I knew who he was and I knew who his wife was. And then it took a while to figure out who the campaign manager was. And then once I kind of figure out who they are, I just put them in a room and I let them start talking. And that first scene with the finding the TV channel was always the first scene. Like, I don't think those first three pages changed much at all. And I don't know why I started there, but it was just like, oh, I feel like he'd be looking to escape and looking for the football game. And then all of a sudden there was humor in him not being able to find ESPN on TV. It's just simple and silly stuff.
We've all been there in a hotel room.
Yeah, you just can't figure out the
your own home.
But it is a really nice kind of intro into a show that's about to deal with some serious image like issues, because you kind of get into it like seeing this guy not be able to find the channel, and immediately everyone in the audience is like, that's me, or that's my dad, or that's my husband, or that's mm-hmm. my... So then you start to understand these people, and then the relationships really jump off the page from, like, the beginning of the play,
yeah.
because you're watching these people, like you said, in a very normal moment. And so you get to see how these people relate to each other in a very normal way, which kind of builds the relationships that help when the conversation gets serious.
Yeah, when it changes. Mm-hmm.
These people, like, you feel like you're listening to your dad and your brother, and... So you guys, had a really awesome run in L.A.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which you were a part of in L.A. as well. And then you guys kind of came over to this coast.
Mm-hmm.
What has the transition been like for the show from West Coast to East Coast in terms of, like, how the show has evolved and also how you've seen, like, how the audience reactions differed or changed at all?
the audience responses have been pretty uniform across the board. You know, they're moved and affected by the story being told. They relate to it. It feels remarkably current. The tone of the show has changed in some ways, and part of that has to do with the tone of the country changing.
Yeah.
What happened before was that I think I felt like we were leaning into the emotion of the horror of the school shooting in some ways, which was very purgative for the audiences. They were able to feel for these people and understand it and also think. But since then, the tone of the country has shifted in some ways, and it certainly felt more like, you know, not just emotional, we have to be smart about these issues. There's a line in the show that Jason's written where Sarah, the senator's wife, says to him, you have to be smart about this, not emotional. And he asks, can I be both? And I think in some ways, the smart part of the guy is coming out in New York in a different way, because it's a more active politician who's going to figure out how to make this horrible event turn into something good, even if it means abandoning his entire platform. The play speaks in a different way now, and it's almost a more of an activist way now. We're inspired to do more work toward the things we believe in now, and then we were kind of feeling things a little more. I do it with a really funny accent here in New York.
He does this weird German accent.
No, I'm kidding. I'm sorry. That's not true. I have a parrot and a limp.
Ooh.
Peg leg. It's really great.
You had said that you're from Maryland.
I am from Columbia, Maryland. Yeah.
And because the play does a really great job of kind of capturing Southern people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm from Florida, the northeast part, and I went to school in Tallahassee.
Florida.
And the play does a really great job of depicting Southerners without being characterization, like being like a caricature of Southerners.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have like family or experiences that have like helped you, like informed you as writing that?
I went to UVA, which is in Charlottesville, and even though Charlottesville is a very blue city, everything around that part of Virginia is very red. And I think maybe only two of my really good friends in college were from further north than I was from. Everybody else was from the south. And so all of my friends and all of their parents, and so whenever we would go to an event and somebody, you know, I was going to southern parts of Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida. That's where my friends were from, and so I'm just meeting their parents and their friends and going to weddings in Atlanta and South Carolina and North Carolina. And just as a actor and as a writer, you're always just watching people and observing people. So I just kind of absorbed all of those people.
Mm.
And Charlie Whitmore was initially based on a specific person that I knew from Raleigh, North Carolina.
And that's the character that Rob plays.
That's the character that Rob plays, Senator Charles Whitmore. And so I kind of had a person in mind who was like that. And that's why it's Raleigh, North Carolina. And then his wife was just kind of an amalgam of my friend's moms.
Mm-hmm. Like, I know that woman. Like,
yeah.
That's what I loved about, like, when she first makes her entrance.
Yeah.
And, like, everything's, like, I'm like, I know this woman. Like, this is my friend's mom.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, right. Like, that's exactly right. She totally exists. And it's this person that, it's really close and it's hard to not stereotype that Southern woman. But, I mean, I think Nadia Bowers, our actress, does a phenomenal job. But these women are real. They are brassy and opinionated. But also what I love so much is how much they love each other. That was always the thing that I was like, they have to be a really strong couple. These two love each other deeply. And they just have this sort of disagreement in terms of their philosophy about religion and perhaps guns. But yeah, so she's based on lots of people I know.
That's awesome.
Remember Southern Democrats when they existed?
The Blue Dogs.
They've gone away.
Frank Underwood.
Frank Underwood.
Yeah,
he's in the Tony Awards.
I didn't mean him. He's not a good example.
He's not a good
version.
Example.
I wish for the days of Frank Underwood. Wait, what? What? I'm sorry.
And his wife is
opposite
of Sarah
Whitmore.
Oh, she's
so sweet. Anyway.
Yeah, I know. I was like,
it's a great show.
A little different in characterization.
Yeah.
So on that note, let's play a game.
Yeah, let's play a game.
A game?
We play games.
You play
I saw
games?
These cards
saw
earlier.
Yeah, what do we do? What do I take off? I'm sorry.
Strip Lights of Broadway.
Strip.
Welcome
Broadway.
To the
Broadwaster
with Naked Boys Singing.
Okay.
Okay,
so what do we do?
So I have Lights of Broadway show cards right here.
Oh my gosh.
And I thought I would have a fun little debate night.
Yes.
With Lights of Broadway.
Oh.
So if you would each pick a card, Kevin is going to try to pick a show. And then, Kevin, if you could come up with a hot debate topic based on that show.
Okay.
And then, Brian, you get to pick who is pro, who is con.
Okay.
After Kevin reads the question.
Sure. Okay. Do I get to find out who they are?
We're going to guess.
Oh, wow. Should we try and embody this person?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
So, the show I have here is Follies by Sondheim. And my statement is, Follies is a musical that should be performed in every high school.
I'm going to go with Rob as con.
Okay.
And Jason as pro. All right,
I like
so,
that.
You are pro Follies in high schools. And Rob, you are con Follies in high school.
Okay, there are so many other better musicals to be doing in high schools than
just
Follies.
Right into it.
I'm not going to wait for you on this one. I've been doing this for a long time, from way before I started in San Diego. So I think there are a lot of better musicals that you could be doing. You could be doing a show that's very inclusive of communities, like The Full Monty. You could be doing a show that's very inclusive of hairstyles, like Hairspray. You could be doing a really long play, like The Coast of Utopia. Or you could hire Kevin Kline to play Falstaff. These are all things that you could be doing instead of doing Follies, which is overdone on the high school circuit. On top of that, sometimes you need to turn another movie into a musical, you know, even if you don't have Leonardo DiCaprio in it. You can put Catch Me If You Can on stage. You can turn it into something fun. So Follies, as far as I'm concerned, stinks. You know what I should do next? I should probably do something like Willy Wonka, like a Roald Dahl project, like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh.
Or The Front Page.
Well, that's very interesting, because if you enjoy Willy Wonka, but you might like Follies. I feel like they're very similar in a way, and I'm not quite sure why you're so anti-Sondheim. You seem so, I don't know.
Oh, I'm not anti-Sondheim.
I would have to say high schools should all do Follies, because, well, I think they should do every Sondheim play that exists, and I think...
Why?
Well, I think... I think they could do it on roller skates. I think they could do it with wearing animal outfits. I think they could do it as...
You're talking like Sir Peter Hall right now.
Well,
it's insane.
No.
I know you're not, believe me.
No, but I just...
Your sensibility is very British.
Well, naturally and rightfully so, because your sensibility is obviously very American and very West Coast and very wrong.
I'm no longer West Coast. I'm much more East Coast right now. I did time.
You did time. You did your time out there, or you did your time here?
I did my time out here, and it's about time.
Well, I...
All right, final thoughts on Follies at every high school.
I think high school students should do company. I think they should do any play that has them playing adults. I think that's great to get them doing rather sexual things that they don't understand at a young age. I think that's what all high school students should. It should be about shedding a light on your awkward sexuality at the worst possible moment, I think, is a wonderful thing for all students. So that's all.
Well, that's fair. That's fair. I can get behind that.
There we go. We just had a compromise.
Oh, well. Yeah, it's common ground.
Brian, do you want to wager,
I
guess?
I have no idea.
Well, I know he was Christian Borle.
No.
No.
I thought you were Jack O'Brien.
That's correct.
He was in San Diego.
Only because of the San Diego.
Oh, see, I went off the Willy Wonka.
No, but like he also said Coast of Utopia.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
And
Hairspray.
That was the other one.
And the Full Monty.
Yes.
So I failed.
Yeah.
I saw your card.
You're not
going to get acceptance speeches.
You're not going to get
it. He came up and he said, "It's about time." And I thought it was funny. It was very. It's about time. It was a very funny moment. And I said, "It's about time." I was trying to do everything I could, Jack. Everything Jack O'Brien.
It's been fire.
You're never going to guess mine because I have.
You were Twyla Tharp, right?
Terrible.
I saw your card.
Peter Hall was close.
No, you're. You know, I think I know.
Yeah, right. Guess.
I thought it was Trevor.
Yeah.
Trevor Nunn?
Yeah.
Trevor
Nunn
and Jack O'Brien.
You guys are better at this game than we are.
I know, that was really well done. You have a really good British accent.
I don't know enough about.
But who knows if it was Trevor Nunn?
Don't let that stop you. You did very, very well.
I can do a British accent, but all I saw was Starlight Express and Cats.
And Cats, which you did beautifully.
The roller skates was great.
That was good.
As soon as you started talking, I was like Trevor Nunn.
I was just doing a vague memory of hearing him talk.
I was just so mesmerized by your accent that I couldn't.
You had a really good accent.
That was kind of Hugh Granty, though.
That's okay.
That's all right. Hugh Grant has a good accent, too. Let's be fair.
He's made some bad choices, but he's a good accent.
Speaking of fictional political figures.
Hugh Grant has a prime minister.
Hugh Grant and Love
Actually. So, Church and State was inspired by Love Actually.
By the tiny little speech in Love Actually when he yells at Billy Bob Thornton.
Yeah, great.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I should have asked that first.
Right.
I should have asked that at the first rehearsal.
Anyway, that ends the show.
That ends the show?
Yeah. Well, thank you for joining us.
The game that was the end of the game.
Oh.
Everybody, again, Church and State is at New World Stages. Tickets are on sale through July as of right now, so get out, go see it. Support not only off-Broadway, but, you know, plays that are of the time. Don't forget to follow us on @BroadWasted. Review us on iTunes.
Please.
Don't forget to check out. We're going to be at the Broadway Spelling Bee May 8th. Definitely donate to the cause of raising money for...
Team Carl.
Or Broadway Bound Kids.
Team Beautiful.
Team Beautiful.
No, you're not Team Beautiful.
No, I'm not.
You're Team Kevin's Laughter.
Oh, right. I'm Kevin's Laughter. Team Friends Laughter.
So don't forget to stay tuned after this. It's a second part of our chat with Broadway Bound Kids about the Broadway Spelling Bee. But you can follow @ChurchStatePlay on all social medias. So as we end every episode, we cheers and we say,
Zoo-doo-wop-bop.
Thanks for joining us, guys.
Thank you, an amazing time.
Yes.
Thank
you.
Previously on Broadwasted, an epilogue, Kevin found his long-lost brother, Charles Nelson Reilly. Kimberly's in a coma from overbaking with her new kitchen appliances. And Brian was left for dead in a horrifying taffy-pulling accident. But first... Part 2 of our beer and rosé chat entitled Broad-Waisted Bound Bee, Electric Boogaloo, with Aaron Glass, Jessica Diaz, and Carl Kensler from Broadway Bound Kids.
So, Carl,
yeah.
We are big fans of the most recent revival of Fiddler on the Roof.
I am as well.
You are?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Because I was in it.
Oh, yeah.
That's not the only reason. I grew up... As you can imagine, I grew up as a German-Irish Catholic in Indiana, so I have a deep connection to the stories of Shalom Aleichem. In fact, when we started rehearsals, they had this big sort of press thing where they interviewed everybody, and they were like, they said, we need to know, like, what is your earliest memory of Fiddler on the Roof? And, that, like, you know, like, the majority of the cast is...
My audition 3 weeks ago.
Kind of. I had seen the movie in college, and I knew a lot of the songs because a college friend got married when she was 22, and there were, like, 7 Fiddler songs in that wedding. And I was like, wow, those are really catchy tunes. And then I realized that they were, but I had no connection to the show until I auditioned for it. And of course, you know, being 6'2" and blonde hair and blue eyes, you can imagine I probably went into audition for productions of the show.
He's actually 5'1", dark hair.
Podcast magic.
Yeah. So I sort of came to the story fresh and was just very moved by it. And also, I thought the production was amazing. I thought Bart's direction was really spot on. It was definitely a production for now, for the 21st century. And the choreography was amazing.
So we've been talking a lot about the Broadway Bound Kids and the programs you offer. I just wanted to ask, like, through the 12 years you've been doing this, do you have any idea how many kids you've actually impacted or worked with in the time you've been working?
So right now we have over 500 kids a week that we work with. So I sadly don't have an exact number,
right.
but it's definitely been thousands of kids that have come through. And the other thing that's really cool is some of them stay with us. So we've had some that have been with us from like first grade all the way through.
That's so cool. And you get to see them kind of like progress all the way through.
Yes.
And we're now working in all five boroughs. At this time,
oh,
including
wow.
Staten Island.
Oh, you get teachers on ferries?
Yep.
We love Staten Island. There's nothing wrong with ferries.
And you get a free view of the Statue of Liberty.
You do?
Yeah.
That's why I always
That's why I tell the tourists.
how do I see Statue of Liberty? And I'm like, oh, they're
just
like, should I go to islands? I'm like, no, take the ferry for free, bro.
Right. It's right there.
I'm so glad you gave directions to Dracula.
How do I get to the Liberty Island?
And
one ferry, two ferries, one train, two train.
Can you just explain your programs? Because I know some are... free and some, well, I don't know. Explain how you would enroll in one of your programs.
Absolutely. So our Saturday program is the one that you were just alluding to. We have a free Saturday program that's for 4th through 8th graders, is funded by donors, and our program that's for high schoolers on Saturdays, partially funded at this time. We would love to make it fully funded by our donors.
Great.
We, in addition, work in after-school programs all throughout the city. We have two amazing programs that we do with the Department of Education that are absolutely incredible. That helps us reach an even wider span and population throughout the five boroughs. And all those programs, whatever we can do, we give the lowest possible rates. We give as many scholarships as we can. And that is constantly our goal, to make everything as accessible as possible. What I think people don't realize when they hear, oh, kids in New York City need access to the arts, but they live in the capital of the theater in the country. And that is actually part of what's difficult about it. There are so many programs, but a lot of them are out of reach for so many kids because they're competitive, they're expensive. It's right here happening in New York City, so it's just not accessible, and that's why we are completely different.
No, but it's true, and especially in a time when arts education is becoming more and more important as we're seeing funding disappear for arts across the board. I think it's, for everybody that I know who's out there that listens to this show, who has at least tweeted one time about your anger about arts education or arts being taken away in funding from the federal or state level, this is a really awesome opportunity for you to actually give back and put your money where your mouth is and like help kids get that art experience that you are so excited and happy for them to have.
Yeah, because I don't think there's someone at this table who is not impacted by arts education at a young age. Like,
oh, yeah.
My
I'm
theater teacher was my
podcast.
Best friend.
I mean,
like,
exactly. That's what got you into podcasting.
Yeah. I'm doing a podcast about musical theater.
Like, well, other thing that's been really cool, and the kids see this too, if you, and they know this if you ask them, is that, so we have like a wide span of reasons of why the kids are taking the classes. So some of them definitely, like, this is what they love. Like, Neil, who was Mowgli in Jungle Book, was one of our students.
Oh,
he
yeah.
our programs for 3 years.
He was fantastic.
He was so good.
Did you teach him how to act with a green screen? Growing up kids?
Specialized program.
Thursday nights at 6 p.m. Green screen acting.
Green screen
for
dinner. I mean, now we realize that's a need that we need to fill.
It's right after voiceover.
2018B will fund the green screen acting.
And all of your spellers, sorry, Carl, are CGI creations.
I knew that was going to happen eventually. Just
holograms.
A matter of time.
Sorry.
I
mean, some of the students do want to do that. Some have, like, been on Broadway and they're performing regionally, but then we also have students that, you know, you ask them what do they want to do and what do they want to be, and, you know, one of the students that you saw today, she wants to be a psychologist, and she feels like being in the arts helps her understand people better, and have another student that wants to be a doctor, and she feels like this helps her talk to people and be more comfortable with people, and she knows she needs to do that.
Yep.
And so they are, even at such a young age, like, they're seeing sometimes outside the scope of what adults see of, like, what these programs are helping them do. Yeah.
I think it's very easy for us, because we're all sort of connected to this as a profession, as an industry, and it's very easy to forget that the arts, for the most part, the arts in education, even though there's less funding for it now than there was when I was a kid, most of the people I know who benefited from it never went on to any kind of career in any of the arts. What it, the thing that it teaches the most is curiosity and empathy and a sort of creativity of thought. And there are a lot of people. I was reading this article in the I think it was in the Times where they were saying that one of the most marketable skills of the 21st century is going to be a skill that a lot of people with arts degrees have, which is creative thinking. Like, yeah. We need people who can be non-linear.
And I think Jessica made a really great point last week on our segment when you talked about how it gives, like, a community theater feel to, like, a big city living. I think that's really an important thing, especially in New York when you talk about how competitive it is, to give these kids, especially the ones who are interested in this as a passion, a place to, like, feel safe to make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like if all of us think back to our community theater days, there's the, like, oh my God, I can't believe I did that, or I did this,
mm-hmm.
or, like, you just tried something and it didn't work and you fell on your face, but you're around people who, like, made it fun and exciting and great to fail to learn. And I think that's a really cool thing that, like, the community theater vibe and what Broadway Bound Kids can bring to education with kids.
Where did you guys grow up?
Like, where...
Yeah, I was about to say, that's actually why we were founded. It was, like, kind of because of the community theater that I had. So I'm from Corsicana, Texas, which is a very small town, but they had one community theater. And Texas is, like, very much about sports and the football. You guys may have heard of this.
I watched Friday Night Lights, so I know.
That's my town. That's my life.
You're from Dillon, Texas.
I tried the sports.
Yeah.
Didn't go well
the
for
sports
me.
Ball. Your twang comes out when you spelled last week.
Did it?
Yeah, oh, yeah, big time.
It has the rosé.
It's the one. It's the rosé.
It's the rosé.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, y'all.
But so I tried all these different things and then found this community theater program in third grade. And I remember specifically, because I look back and think of how young third graders are now, but I remember going there and being like, oh, this is, like, where I feel comfortable. Like, these people are, like, my people. Like, this is going to be, like, my thing. Like, sports isn't necessarily going to be that. But it became, like, very much my second home, very much my second family. Like, difficult things that you go through, like, that's the place where you go where it's just, like, happy and safe. And it helps you figure out, like, just who you are, because you don't have to have any sort of pretense with that group of people. And so that's exactly, like, why Broadway Bound was started, because we wanted to give that same feeling. Because moving here, as I'm sure you guys all knew when you first moved here, there's tons of people around you, but it's not easy to find community.
Yeah. And where are you from?
I'm from Western Maryland, Cumberland, and there actually is a television show written about my town. No joke. My name is Earl. It's about my hometown.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love My Name is Earl.
That's where I'm
so
from.
So we have Friday Night Lights and My Name is Earl.
You win!
Great.
Greg Garcia wrote that show.
Oh, yeah.
About
oh, I love Greg Garcia.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Incredible.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, yes, I'm from Super Hicktown in Western Maryland, right across the border from the hickest part of West Virginia.
Uh-huh.
And I started doing theater when I was in fifth grade. I had been dancing for a long time. My mom put me in dance classes right away when I was probably 2.5, like just able to stand and tap shoes and move around. But then my great aunt saw an ad in the paper for the high school is doing The Sound of Music, and they wanted to cast kids, actual kids, to play the kids. So I went and auditioned, and I'd never sung in public at all, and the director, who eventually became my director in high school, sat all the way back in this giant auditorium, and my mom was back there too, and I just sang, I think it was Happy Birthday, and I was able to fill this auditorium. I didn't even know I could do that, but I literally, theater helped me find my voice.
Cool.
That's it. Actual voice.
Literally.
Yeah. Literally.
Yeah. Awesome.
Found my voice. And I continued doing community theater. I worked in our equity theater and went on to college to do musical theater at Syracuse.
Oh, you went to Syracuse?
Yeah.
Nice.
I always felt that, like, band class, theater class, all those arts classes are sort of like they're a little bit of a funnel for weird kids, do you know? Like, if you're kind of feeling like a misfit, you end up falling into one of those.
Yeah.
And that, I think what you were saying, or what everyone was saying, is that sense of community comes from the fact that everybody walks in there a little bit like, where do I go? What do I do? And when I was a kid, my mom, she was a single mom, and my brother and I tried everything. And I was like a square peg in a round hole every freaking time until I went to this acting class called Young Actors Theater in downtown Indianapolis. It's still there. It was housed in this beautiful, dilapidated old Victorian theater.
Cool.
And I had like a J.M. Barrie, like Peter Pan childhood. We put on plays in this giant theater. It was so dangerous. I walked around on that fly rail up there. I mean, I did so many dangerous, terrible things. But it was where I found my tribe. It's like a lot of kids who were misfits like that. Who it was where I learned about Shakespeare. It's where I learned about so much. It's where I first kissed a girl. But that's a story for next week.
On that note, let's play round two of the Champion of Letters.
Championship of Letters.
I wish I had like a
tournament
letter
of letters.
Tournament of letters.
Championship of Letters.
Well, the Champion of Letters, tournament style.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Sure.
As long as I win.
Which one are we going with?
That was like 12 names at once.
I don't know. It's Kimberly made up a spelling bee. Okay, we have four spellers.
That's right. Aaron is left, Carl is left, I am left, and Kevin is left.
And Kevin.
And Kevin.
Yeah, I'm really happy to be out of this.
So, this week's category is Broadway theaters.
Oh, bum, 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 bum.
All right, Aaron. The Gerald Schoenfeld. You don't need to spell the. Unless you think you can't.
The is a gimme.
Oh my gosh.
Gerald Schoenfeld.
Gerald. G E R A L D.
Correct.
Oof, okay.
You're almost home.
Oof.
Schoenfeld.
Finger space. S C H O E N F E L D.
That is correct.
There's the.
Carl.
Yes.
Lyceum.
Can you use it in a sentence?
The bee has trained you well.
Lyceum Theater is owned by the Schubert Organization.
Country of origin?
Broadway.
Broadway country. It's theater country. L-Y-C-E-U-M.
That is correct.
Good job.
Brian.
Oh,
yes.
God.
The Lunt Fontaine.
L-U-N-T dash F-O-N-T-A-I-N-E?
That is incorrect.
Lunt
Fontaine. L-U-N-T dash F-O-N-T-A-N-N-E. Is it Lunt Fontaine?
I've heard it both ways, but I think it is Fontaine.
I like the way that you said that confused Brian, so.
No. Even if she's roadblock.
I'm just that
fun. I would have spelled it the same way, too.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. See, if you were in the bee and you had raised the most money, you would get a reanimator cheat.
Right, I would.
You could turn in, and then they'll make you do a ridiculous challenge, and then you don't die.
Totally.
That's amazing.
I don't have that for you. You're dead.
So then you're a zombie speller?
Because I'm
right.
A zombie speller.
Yeah.
All right, Kevin. Ready?
Okay.
Vivian Beaumont.
I do declare.
So Vivian is V-I-V-I-A-N.
Mm-hmm.
And Beaumont is B-E-A-U-M-O-N-T. And that's it.
That's correct.
Whoa! Whoa! So going next week, we have three spellers.
Three spellers.
Who's in your... I know Andrew... Friends of the show, Andrew Keenan-Bolger, as well as friend of the show, Michael Park, are spellers. Who else?
Also... Lauren Chardulo from Aladdin is a return speller. Bhavish Patel from President Laughter.
And that's Kevin's team.
That's my team.
That's your team?
Kevin's Laughter.
Stephanie Torrance from Waitress.
Yes.
Grace McLean from The Great Comet. Evan Todd from Beautiful.
That's my team.
That's your
team. Beautiful Brian.
Jeff Packard from Bandstand. Gregory Tricco from Hamilton, Ben Jeffrey from Lion King, and Kelly Hutchinson from The Government Inspector.
Awesome.
So how do we donate?
You can go onto our website, broadwayboundkids.net. Our Facebook page, our Twitter page, our Instagram account, there's a link in any of those social medias as well.
So just to let you know, please donate to Brian's team on Evan Tom and Beautiful.
You'll be donating to Carl's team.
That's right.
This is all very funny, but we all know you listen because you love me. So donate to Present Laughter.
And if you hate us all, just donate to Lauren Chardulo from Aladdin. She's already doing a great job.
So you can donate to any team, and the team, the more money a team has, the more cheats they get to buy at the B. The cheats are like lifelines. All the proceeds go to Broadway Bound Kids, but you select a Broadway speller that you want to win the B.
And also ticket sales, 100% goes to Broadway Bound Kids.
Stay tuned, because next week we are back with the final chapter of our epic quest with Broadway Bound Kids and the conclusion of the Tournament of Letters. Who will win?
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.